We're holding on Mem Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud. Mishnah says, "Hachoshev the shloach yad b'kodin." If a person thinks to do shlichus yad in a pikodin, so again, as we've learned before, shlichus yad means that he's misusing the pikodin for his own purposes, and now he becomes chayiv and everything for it, including onsin. Rashi says that it means that he said in front of Edim that I'm going to take this pikodin for myself. So Tosfos also points out that based on what we're going to learn in the Gemara, that in fact we are, even though it says achoshev, we're talking about speaking, and Tosfos compares it to actually the matter of pigul, where also we have all over the expression is a person thinks a thought of pigul, but in quite a number of places Tosfos says that actually it doesn't mean thinking it, it means speaking it. That not everybody agrees to that. First of all, Rashi himself actually mentions elsewhere, Argos Abach points out that Rashi himself in Kiddushin says that it can include thinking as well, not just speaking, unlike here where he's saying it means speaking. And as far as pigul as well, actually the truth is there is discussion between Rashi and Tosfos elsewhere. We'll learn about it when we get to say the Kodshim Bez Hashem, whether in fact pigul requires speaking or whether it is enough to think about it. As far as the fact that Rashi mentions Edim over here, it's not really that without Edim it wouldn't be effective, but practically speaking, Achronim point out, if there's no Edim, then there's not going to be any way of proving that he said it, and therefore what happened to be Mechayev him? And I guess the same question could be asked according to on Rashi saying in Kedushin that it means that if he thinks it, if he only thinks it, then how do we know that he actually ever did it? Ashtus, we would have to say that means he thought about it, and then later on he actually used it, and then maybe later on he tells somebody that, you know what, I actually did that. Whatever the case, there are also Mephoshim who point out that given that the whole matter of Shlichus Yad is a Knas, then we can say a Knas requires Edim. In any case, so he thought or said to do it, but he didn't actually do it yet. Beshama says he's going to be Chayev already at that point for the consequences of Shlichus Yad. Or Beshilom, any Chayev actually uses Shlach by Yad. Beshilom says only when he actually uses it, since after all, the Pasuk says that he has to swear that he did not stretch forth his hand against the property of his fellow Yid, implying that he actually has to stretch forth his hand and actually do it. Until that point, Basilil says that he's not chayev. We touched on that yesterday. We talked about whether it's that Bishama and Basilil disagree on the question of Shlichus Yad Tzricha Chisorin or not. Is it that Bishamai holds that Shlichus Yad Eina Tzricha Chisorin, that it doesn't matter whether anything's lacking from it or not, he can still be Chayev for Shlichus Yad, and Basilil would disagree with that, or is it they both agree that Shlichus Yad Eina Tzricha Chisorin, but does there at least have to be that he did some kind of action? In many places in Shas, by the way, we find that Bishamai tends to go according to the potential of something, and Bishilul according to the actuality of it. Classic example being when it comes to Neres Hanukkah, where Bishamai says you light from 8 going down to 1, because the 8, one way of looking at it is that at the beginning of Hanukkah, you have 8 potential days to come. The second day, you have 7 potential days to come, and so forth, and therefore you light like that, whereas Bishilul goes according to the actual number of days. There's many examples of it throughout Shas. There's a couple of Sichas where it ever points out, where it ever makes that point. So here also, Bishama is going according to the potential, and Bishilul is going according to the actual. Continues the Mishnah. He tests the Chavis. Suppose that there was a barrel of wine that was the Pekodin. Now, suppose he tilted it, intended to pour out wine from it for himself, to do shlichus yad with it. The not lemen revius, and he took a revius of wine out of the barrel. The nishbra, and the barrel broke later on. Edim Ashalom el revius, he has to pay only a revius because he hasn't done any kinyan. He hasn't done any maisa kinyan on this barrel. By tilting it, he didn't lift it up, he didn't move it or anything like that. Therefore, he hasn't made a maisa kinyan on the rest of the barrel. So the revius that he used, he can be chayev for, but not the rest. He bia, on the other hand, if he lifted up the barrel, then not the lemon revius, and then took a revius out of it, the nishbara, and then it broke later on, mashalom mekula, then he's paying for the value of the entire thing because he was koneh with that hagba. So the Gemara starts off, menahani mili, Let's deal with the machlokas b'shama b'shilol. That b'shama is saying that it's enough for him to have machshava, and again, whether the machshava means just thinking in his mind or whether it means speaking, where is b'shama getting that from? So like this, the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa, when the pasuk says I'll call dvar pesha, the pasuk says for any matter of carelessness of pshia, and the word dvar also means speaking, also means a word. So b'shama imim malamet shachayev al machshava. So Beshama says, you see from that he's chayav for machshava. So here's where Tosfos points out that you see that we don't mean actual machshava, we mean divur, because he's darshiting from the word divar. Anyway, Beshama says, you see from that that's tantamount to maisa, and therefore that he can already be chayav for that. Whereas Vesilla said only until he actually does Shlichos Yad as he chayev, Shanema, as it says in the Pasuk, because we learned in the Mishnah, in the Shalach Yadoi from Lachas Re'ehu, where the Pasuk says if he did that he's chayev, that he can swear and be potter if he didn't stretch forth his hand against the other guy's property, implying that if he stretched forth his hand, he actually committed Shlichos Yad, only then is he chayev in Unsin. So now the Braisa continues. Okay, the Bishama says, what are you doing with the Pasuk I'll call Dvar Pesha? Fine, we have the same question on you. What are you doing with the words Imlay Shalach Yadai, which implies that there has to be actual Shlichus Yad? Ella, so Bishilo says, in Kain Matam and Lema I'll call Dvar Pesha. So what are we doing with the words I'll call Dvar Pesha? We're not learning from it. The concept of that machshava is enough to be machayavim. Rather, the Sila would say we learn from it the following din. She yochol emli ella omer la'avdei l'shluchoi. She yochol emli ella hu. If you didn't have the words al kol dvar pesha, you would think maybe only if he personally does the shlichos yad, that's when he would be chayav. And how would we know that the same din also applies if he told his Eved or he told his Shliach to commit the Shlichos Yad? So how would we know that he's also Chayev? I'll call Dvar Pesha. Therefore, the Pasuk says, I'll call Dvar Pesha. So in other words, Basil is saying, this is one of those cases where even though usually Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, this would be an exception to the rule, and we would say that the Mishaleach is Chayev. So therefore, Basilo says that's what we're learning from our Kol Dvar Pesha, not like Yubis Shammai is saying that we learn from that a person can be chayev only based on a thought or on a word without actually doing it. Now, Bas Shammai does not explain what they do with Basilo's pasuk imlo shalach yodim imlachas reyu. I mean, Balabatish, we could say that they're saying he has to swear that there hasn't been any shlichus yad involved, including in thought. There are details within this. The Smeh points out that the Smeh argues that it would have to be, in order for the Mishaleach to be chayev over here, it would have to be that the Shliach didn't know that it's a pikadin, or it would have to be that he doesn't have what to pay. Otherwise, the Smeh says we would apply the usual rule of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. And then they Achronim discuss that. So why when we say yes Shliach Dvar Aveira, it doesn't matter whether the Shliach knows or not. The Shach actually brings, interestingly, from his father, the Shach's father was a distinguished Talmud Chacham as well, not of the caliber of his son, maybe, but the Shach does quote him in a number of places in his Pirushim, and he gives an answer about what the Smeh was thinking, that the Pasuk is coming to be Marber, a case, so it's coming to tell us that there's a case where otherwise you would say he's Potter, and nevertheless we're saying he's Chayev, but still, why wouldn't we say that both of them are Chayev? So therefore it must be that we're talking about where the Shliach didn't know. So therefore, Sibisil says that's what we learned from our Kol Dvar Pesha. Next, the Mishnah said, Hitter Sachal Vischola. We said we have the case where he tilted the barrel and poured off some wine from it versus where he picked up the barrel and poured the wine out of it. Where we said in the first case, he's Chayev and Onsin only for that Revius, and in the Sefer, he's Chayev and Onsin for the entire barrel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, lo shonu ela shenishbar, ela nishbara. The Mishnah is talking about only when it broke. Avalach mitza, but if after he took out that revius, the rest of it went sour, mishalamas kula, then regardless he's going to be paying the whole thing. My time of Giri Didei Huda Hanullah, because we can say his arrows are what caused it, meaning, in other words, it's normal when a barrel is not completely full, it's more likely for it to spoil, for the contents of it to spoil. So therefore, if he had left that revius in there, it's less likely the rest of it would have spoiled. Therefore, it would be an onus, and he'd be potter as a shema chinam or as a shema sachar. But here, where he took out that revius, that makes it more likely that makes it more likely for the rest of it to spoil, and therefore therefore for him to be chayav, even though he didn't do meshicha or hagvah or anything on the rest of it, he can still be chayav because he was directly mazik if he had died. So in that case, a few blocks earlier discussed that in that case, the same din, that din might apply only to wine or things like that. We're taking out one revius affects the whole rest of it. When you're talking about, if let's say it was a barrel of oil or a barrel of figs or something like that, not necessarily would that din apply because, again, you can't say the rest of them spoiled because of taking out one revius or a few figs or whatever, because it doesn't work that way. Then we said in the Mishnah, Bia v'Natal HaMenachola. Then we said that if he lifted up the barrel and took out the revius, then he's chayav for the whole thing. So Omar Shmuel, Loi Natal, Natal Mamash. So Shmuel says it doesn't actually have to mean that he actually took the revius. And a Kivin Sheik Bia Lito, once he picked it up in order to take the revius, Afri Shalai Natal, even though he didn't take it yet, then already he's chayav for the whole thing. Now, this has nothing to do with the machlokas b'shama b'shilo, because at least he did a maisa. Even b'shilo agrees that once he did a maisa, he can be chayev, but it does go does have to do with the question that we've been discussing, whether shlichos yad tzricha chisarin or not. So, leima kasava shmuel, shlichos yad ain't a tzricha chisarin. Does that mean that Shmuel holds that shlichos yad does not require chisarin, and therefore that he can be chayev, even though nothing is actually missing from it yet? Which we've discussed the last couple of blocks, whether that's the case. You said answer loy, not necessarily. You could say that usually shlichus yad tzricha chisarin, but shiny hocha, you could argue over here, when he picks it up to take the revius, denichalay, to heavy hachavis kula bosis laha revius. He figures, let the whole rest of the barrel be a bosis and help protect that revius. In other words, again, we have the opposite of what we were just saying. We were just saying that if you take out a revius of wine from the barrel, it's more likely that the rest of it is going to spoil. Well, the other way around also, when he picks it up, intending to be koina, a revius of it for himself, so he may figure, you know what, I do want that revius, but I don't want to take it out right now because I don't need it right now. I only need it later on. And meanwhile, it's going to spoil. So let it stay together with the rest of the barrel until I feel like taking it. So therefore, in effect, it actually says he becomes a shoyl on the rest of the contents of the barrel. The revius itself would be a matter of shlichus yad. And he becomes a gazlan for that. The rest of it he would become a shoyl, and therefore he would be chayev. So therefore he'd be chayev and oinsin on the entire thing. So usually we would say shlichus yad tzrichah chisaron, but in this case he's in effect saying that I'm becoming a shoyl on most of it and a gazlan on an abuse of it. So, boy Rav Ashi. So in that case, Rav Ashi asked the question, he via anaki little him in a dinner, what would be in a similar case? Suppose that it was a purse full of money, that he picked it up intending to take one dinner from it, and he didn't end up taking the dinner, what would be the din? According to Shmuel, would he be chayev on the grounds of shlichus yad? Mahu, what would be the din? Would we say chamra hu deleminter ela agav chamra? Wine is protected only together with other wine. Again, if you take out the revius and put it separately, it's more likely to spoil. Avol zuzam minter. But you could say in the case of coins, it's not like that. One coin does not necessarily require the rest of them to be with it. So you can't say he's making the rest of the bag a bosses for that coin. We can't say that he became a shoyl on the rest of the coins. On the other hand, you could argue that no, not really. It's true that the coins are not going to spoil when they're individually, unlike wine. On the other hand, the fact is you guard an arniki when you have a purse full of money, you guard it much differently than one individual coin. One individual coin may easily get lost. A whole purse is much less likely to. So therefore, you could argue that maybe in a sense he is borrowing the entire purse to serve as a bosses for this coin. The Gemara says teku. We have to leave it with it's left unresolved, and therefore, as would usually be the case, in other words, therefore we can't be mechayev of him. We can't be mechayev of him on shlichus yad, because we don't know in fact whether he is chayev or not. In fact, so when the Rambam brings this halacha over here in the Rambam brings over here this halacha in Hilchus Gzela, in Hilchus Gzela Vaveda, so he says on it, let's see, the Rambam says on it that, okay, I can't find it right now. So it's different when the Rambam says on it that he's chayev when it comes to a barrel, then he's chayev for the entire thing. When it comes to a money bag, he says that it's a suffix, whether he's chayev on the whole bag or only the one dinar. And the Ravid actually has a whole different, din. The fact is, he didn't even take out the revius yet. How can he be chayev in the whole thing? The Ravid actually learns the whole sugya differently. He says that the Ravid learns this entire sugya differently. He says the word is that if he actually took the revius, is he chayev for the whole rest of the thing? So we're saying that you could say maybe he took it originally intending to take the entire thing, and then he takes out only the revius. Is he chayev for only that revius or not? So Shmuel was saying that even though he didn't take out the rest of the wine, he can still be chayev for the rest of it, because once he actually takes out the revius, then the rest of it is more likely to spoil. So now the question would be about as far as a purse. But the Ravid learns that shlichus yad shlichus chisarim. So he says, therefore, that if he didn't end up taking out the revius, even Shmuel would agree that he's not chayev yet, because no chisarin. And the same way, if he didn't take out the one coin yet, then he wouldn't be chayev yet. So that's the guy that learns that we have to follow the opinion that shlichus yad tzricha chisarin, as opposed to, according to the Rambam, we're saying that shlichus yad ain't tzricha chisarin. Okay. Hadran alo hamachin. This next perek over here, perek hazahav, is going to start dealing with the dinim of kinyon.
So one second, what's the halacha? Yes, chisaron or ain't chisaron?
The halacha is you have a machlokas of the Rambam and the Ravid on that point of whether shlichus yad tzricha chisaron or not. So as usual, when there's machlokas rishonim, we don't really have a way of resolving it one way or the other. In general, when it comes to dinim mominus, you have a concept called kimli, that a person can say when there's a claim against him, I hold like such and such an opinion in halacha, and therefore that if you want to collect money from me, then you have to demonstrate that I'm actually chayev. And since we have machlokas rishonim, you don't necessarily have the ability to do that.
That sounds absurd to me. That a person can say, I choose the halacha. It sounds absurd
to me. Because Motzi Mechaber L'Avaraya, you want to prove that I'm chayev to pay. You have to prove that the halacha is like that opinion. The truth is actually in this case, the Mechaber does paskin over here in Shulchan Aruch, like the Rambam, that in fact it's just the Rambam says it's just a suffix whether he's chayev or not. So in fact, the Mechaber brings just the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah over there on the Rambam, and for the Rambam, so therefore the Mechaber doesn't pay attention to what the Ravid is saying. So in this particular case, we would say b'pashtus that the halacha is not like the Ravid. The halacha would be like the Rambam. That in fact, in a case like that, there would be a suffix whether he's chayev, which the result of there being a suffix would be, in other words, that uh, that if if the other guy takes the money, tofas in mitzvah miyada, but otherwise we can't be mechayev him because of a suffix, as opposed to, again, according to the David, there wouldn't even be a suffix in the first place, because according to him, shlichos yad tzricha chisorin, and without chisorin, there's nothing to talk about, but the Shulchan Aruch does not paskin like him, rather paskin like the Rambam.
Why don't we take, in this case, just the majority of opinions?
Well, that's essentially what we're doing. You have the Rambam versus the Raivad or Yechidim, and then you have the Mechaber, the Magid Mishnah, and the Rambam over there, friend for the Rambam, and explains how his Shitta can be made to work and to deflect the Raivad's objection, and the later, and the Shulchan, and the Mechaber, when he comes to write the Shulchan Aruch, he in turn follows that and passes it like the Rambam.
So we have the Mechaber, we have the Rambam, and we have the Raivad.
So that's what I'm saying. It depends. So there's no hard and fast rule when it comes to paskin and such things. In this particular case, we have the Mechaber paskin like the Rambam, and that would mean that Shlichus Yad ain't a tzricha chisarin, and therefore that just the fact that he picked up the barrel intending to take wine from it would already be mechayev him for the whole thing, as opposed to according to the Raivad, it would not. So yes, the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Rambam, and that nevertheless you could conceivably have. Maybe a shomer would be able to say Kim Lee that I hold like the Raivad, and if you want to collect from me, then you'd have to prove the halacha is not like him. Whether he could say Kim Lee in a case like this, I don't know.
Well, there's two opinions out of three. You've proved it, haven't you?
Not necessarily, because the Mechaber follows the Rambam in that, and then those are two opinions. It's true, but that doesn't mean necessarily that the Raivad's opinion is completely rejected, because not like they ever actually voted on it. If they were all together and voted on it, that would be different. All right. Anyway, we need to move on, so let's go. Okay. This next Perek HaZohav deals with matters of kidney. Now we have like this. We know that there are various kinds of kinyan. We learned about a lot of them in Kiddushin. In particular, one kind of kinyan is called kinyan chalifin. So I have an item, you have a different item, we trade one for another. So then once I do mashicha on one item, then you're koina the other one automatically, even if it's not physically present over here. So the first part of our parak is going to be dealing with matters of kinyan. Now we have an issue that when it comes to coins, the Gemara is going to explain for us, is going to explain what our Mishnah is going to say, that matbeya ain't a nikna b'chalifin. You cannot acquire coins by means of kinyan chalifin. You need a different kind of kinyan for that. So now, therefore, our Mishnah is going to begin with discussing the case. If you're exchanging one kind of coin for another, then what creates the kinyan? So the Mishnah starts off, hazahav koina es hakesef. Gold acquires silver, meaning I have a certain number of gold coins. I want to exchange them for a certain number of your silver coins. At the rate, usually it would be, usually it was 24 silver dinar for one gold dinar, for example. We'll see about that in the Gemara. So the question is, which one of them, we have to consider which one is considered the money and which one is considered the commodity. The Gemara is going to call payers, the produce. The rule being, again, exchanging money when it comes to metalflin does not create a kinyan. When it comes to karka and avodim, we learned in Kiddushin that yes, then kesef is one of the valid ways of making a kinyan. But when it comes to metalflin, kesef is not a valid way of making a kinyan, as we'll see in the Gemara in a few days why that's so. So the question is, which one is considered the money and which one is considered the commodity in terms of kinyanim? So hazahav koinas akasef, meaning, in other words, so Reuven and Shimon are trading, and Reuven gives Shimon the gold dinarim, and Shimon does some kind of kinyan on them, such as mashicha or hagbah or what have you. At that point, the deal is done, and he has to give Reuven the silver coins. He can't change his mind. But silver does not acquire gold in the sense the other way around, that if Reuven had given the silver, then Shimon should follow through with the gold, obviously. But if Shimon changes his mind and says, you know what, I don't want to make the exchange after all, he would legally be able to change his mind, and so either one could change their mind, actually, because the silver is considered mois, it's considered money, so therefore it doesn't accomplish a kinyan of metal. So we'll see in the Gemara eventually on Daf Mem Zayin. We're going to talk about why it is that Kesef is not Kona, why Kesef is not Torah, was not Kona, whether that's not Torah or Medirabanan. We'll see about that there. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Hanachoshes Kona as a Kesef, that Kesef ain't a Kona as Hanachoshes. The same relationship you have between silver and copper, where the silver, the copper acquires the silver. Again, the copper is considered to be the commodity, and the silver is considered to be the money. So therefore, once Mashiach has been done on the commodity, on the peiros, which is the copper coins, then at that point he's coined them, and now the other one has the requirement to give him the silver. Back kesef and a koines and a choshes, but silver does not acquire copper for the same reason. The silver is considered money relative, silver coins are considered money relative to the copper. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Mois harois koina sayafos. Bad coins, meaning in other words, so if you have coins that have been disqualified to use any more for currency. So here they can't circulate anymore. And Tosfos says actually it doesn't necessarily have to be that there's two kinds of ways in which coins can be possible to use. It's called psalte malchus, where the government officially withdrew them from circulation, versus psalato medina, where people don't want to use them anymore. And then you also have Tosfos says over here anyway, Mois Harois doesn't necessarily mean they're completely unusable because of one or the other of these factors. It can mean maybe that they do circulate, but only with difficulty. Most people won't want to accept them. Anyway, so those are not considered money anymore for this purpose. Those are considered the commodity, Koinus Asayafis. So therefore, when he does Meshicha or whatever form of Kenyan on those, then he's Koinus the good ones, Asayafis, the good ones that he's giving him in exchange, by Yafis, and Koinus Asayafis, but the good ones don't acquire the bad ones for the same reason, because the exchange of money doesn't constitute a Kenyan. Continues the Mishnah, Asimon Koinus Amatea, and Asimon acquires a coin. Rashi explains that an asimon is a blank, is a metal blank that's going to be used for striking a coin, but has not actually been used yet. Right now it's just a flat planchet of metal. Tosfos actually disagrees with that and says that an asimon is also, it has some kind of design on it, but it's also something that doesn't really circulate well. In modern Hebrew, they used to hear that people a generation ago in Eretz Yisrael, they used to have phone tokens. They called them asimonim, coming from our Gemara over here. But those actually had a design on them, of course, so that would fit better with Tosfos' definition. But according to Rashi, it means that it has no design on it at all. Anyway, so that kones amateya, that, if you give that in exchange, that acquires the Matbea. Again, the same idea. Once he did Mashicha on the Asimon, and the other guy is required to give him the equivalent amount of money and can't renege on the deal, Matbea, in a coin as Asimon, the coin cannot acquire the Asimon for the same reason. And the general rule, Mataltlin, coin as Matbea, Matbea in a coin as Mataltlin. When there's Mashicha, or any form of Kenyan that's been accomplished on the Talplin, then that acquires the coins, meaning that now the other person is required to pay him the money, and neither one can back out of the deal. Matveya, in accordance on the Talplin, but giving the money does not acquire the Talplin, because again, that's the Kenyan Kesef, does not work for Talplin. Zehaklal, the general rule is, kol Talplin koinim zeh, all Talplin acquire one another, meaning, in other words, you can have, and Rashi points out, means that when it comes to Metalplin against Metalplin, till now we've been talking about coins against Metalplin, and those have the rule that we just said, when it comes to Metalplin against Metalplin, then you have two possible ways. It can be Kenyan Chalifin, so like, for example, Machlis Torah Machamer, I'm trading my cow for your donkey, so as soon as you do Mashicha on the cow, automatically I've acquired the donkey. Or it can be Betoras Damim, where we figure out the actual monetary value of each one of them, and one does Mashicha on the other one, then also, and then one does Mashicha on one of them, then automatically that acquires it for the other one. So that also works. As opposed to when there's actual coins involved, where there we say that coins do not accomplish a king. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, what does all this mean? What are examples of all of this? Moshe Chemenu Peres, if the Lekeach did the Shicha on the Peres, on the fruit or commodity or whatever, the Loi Nosan Loi Moris, and the other guy had not paid him the money yet, any Yochalach Zeboi, neither one can back out of the deal at that point, because at that point, the Kinyan has already been done on the Metalplin, and therefore the entire deal is considered to be done. But if he gave him coins, and did not yet do Mashiach on the Peres, then either one of them can change their mind, because again, no Kinyan has been accomplished yet, because the exchange of money does not accomplish a Kinyan. Aval Omru, but the Chachamim said, even though it's true that legally you're allowed to do that because there's no Kenyan yet, but a person who acts that way is not doing properly, that I'm phrases it, Loy also kavaisi Yisrael, he hasn't acted the way a Yid should act. So therefore, so the Chacham said, Mishapora, Hashem who punished me, Anshe Dera Mabel, Hashem who took, who exacted punishment from the people of the Mabel, Umidera Flogger, and from the people of the Dera Flogger who built the tower above all, who also Lipora, the Gemara later on when it brings this Mishnah, it's going to bring a Bryce on it that mentions a couple of other examples, who also Lipora, Mimisha in Umid Bidibura. Hashem will pay back, Hashem will punish somebody who does not keep his word. Later on, we're going to learn in the Gemara, is that the Mishnah is saying you should know a person who does that is not acting like a Yid and deserves to be punished by Hashem? Or does it mean that Beis Din actually takes that in Beis Din itself, they actually make this declaration to him and they make him accept on himself that he's ready to accept that curse on himself, if he wants to renege on the deal? So this is the famous Mishapara that we're going to learn about throughout this perek, and that's mentioned in other places in Shas, where a person reneges on his deal, where he's allowed to up the alocha, but he still shouldn't do that. Namely, in this case, where the money changed hands, but the commodity didn't, then he has to, then there's this curse of Mishapara involved. An interesting sicha, actually, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind this. Meshicha represents our avoda milamata lamayla, where we're drawing things closer to Elikos. Mois, which is money, represents ashpa milamayla, where Hashem is bestowing on us. So we're saying when there's been only the sarusa de la'ela, the money, and not yet the meshicha, you haven't reciprocated, then it means, you know, the thing hasn't been accomplished yet. The purpose of avoda is that the way that avoda is effective is when you do your part from below. So we tell the person, listen, you're living in a gashmiistic world after all. You have to do your part. You can't expect everything to come from Hashem. But we're going to mention to you davka cases involving goyim. After all, why do we mention in Mishapara? Why are we mentioning only cases of the marble on the Dera Floga before there was even a Jewish people? The Mishnah is going to add also the people, the Braisa rather in the Gemara, is going to add also the people of Sidoim and the Mitzriim. So why are we mentioning only those cases? That ever talks about the deeper idea behind it is that we're telling him, look, you're a Yid. In principle, we shouldn't even need to be telling you this. It should be enough that Hashem is being Mashpia Malamayla, and that's good enough. But the fact is, you live in a Gashmiistic world, in a world where there is Klippus, and therefore you have to do your part, and therefore we're going to tell you Mishapara, not in order to curse you, but to motivate you to live up to your responsibilities and to actually accomplish your Mashiach. The Teferis Yisrael is an interesting explanation of why we mentioned Dafka these four. So he says that in general you could distinguish four different reasons why a person does Averis, because he has Gashmiistika, because he's looking for kavod, because he wants money, or because just because he denies Hashem. So each of these four that we're mentioning over here, the Dirt Amabel were into Gezel in order. It's true they were into Gezel, but the main thing was they were terribly involved in their Gashmiistic Ketivus, as we know about Benoisa Odom and whatever. Then you have the Anshe Dirt Afloga, the Nasal on Hashem. We want a name for ourselves. We want to become famous. So that's the looking for covered. And then the people of Sodom were greedy for money, and Pare and his Mitzriim were Mi Hashem. They're saying who is Hashem that we should have to listen to him. So therefore they represent when a person just denies Hashem completely. The Rosh gives a different point. He says that again, the people in the time of the people of Mabel, each one of these groups did not follow their word. The Dirt Amabel, people would promise one another to do something and they wouldn't follow through. And the Mitzriim also, the Mitzriim kept on saying, we'll send the Jewish people free, and they didn't end up doing that. The Meiri adds also, when it comes to each one of them, they acted in a way where a human based in is not able to do something about them. For example, the Dirt Amabel would steal one chip of wood from a fence or one beam that a person had in front of him to sell, and eventually the whole thing is gone, but they're each taking less than a shovel crota. Reb Shimon finishes off the Mishnah and says, now you Tanakama are saying that until Meshicha or some form of Kinyan is done, then either side can change their mind. Reb Shimon says, no. Whoever has the money in his hands has the upper hand. So Reb Shimon is saying the seller has everything in his hand because he has the commodity. He also has the money at this point because the Lekeach has given him the money and not yet done the Meshicha. Therefore, Reb Shimon says at this point, only the Moicher can change his mind, not the Lekeach, as we'll see eventually in the Gemara why he says that. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Masnile Rebbe l'Reb Shimon Brei. When Rebbe was teaching this Mishnah to his son Reb Shimon, he taught him, as we have it, Hazahav Koine Hazakasa, that the gold acquires the silver, because again, the idea is the gold is considered the payrus and the silver is considered the money. Omale, so Reb Shimon asks him, Rebbe, Shanisa Lono V'Yalvusecha, when you were younger, you taught us the other way around, Hakesef Koine Hazahav, that the silver acquires the gold. The other way around, that we would consider the silver to be the payrus and the gold to be the money. The tax of a tishna lana b'ziknusecha, now in your old age, when you're older, you're teaching us the other way around. Hazahav koines hakesef, that is the gold acquires the silver rather than the other way around. So what's going on over here? Why are you changing your mind? So that's the Marashal explains, in fact, what he means to say by that, Reb Shimon is asking, is it that you actually changed your mind, or is it that just you forgot what you said before? Now, Rebbe did not answer. Therefore, the Gemara continues, let's not assume that Rebbe forgot, let's assume Rebbe had a reason to change his mind. Well, then we have to ask, Me'ikra, the Aldusi, my sover, or is it Nusi, my sover? So what was his svara each time? Again, when Reb Shimon, according to Marashal, when Reb Shimon is asking Rebbe, it means he's saying that I don't know if you forgot or you changed your mind. Now, since Rebbe did not answer, presumably it doesn't mean he forgot. Otherwise, he would have said so. So it must mean there's a svara involved. Well, what is that svara? So the answer is the Alduse svara. When Rebbe was younger, he figured Dava de Choshiv, because gold is more important, it's more valuable. Therefore, have a tiva. Therefore, we should consider that the money. The Kasper de Lechoshiv, silver, which is less valuable, have a Pera, would be considered the Peras. The Koni Le Pera Le Tiva. So therefore, as usual, the Kinyan of the Peras accomplishes the Kinyan of the money. And therefore, when he was younger, he figured out Kesef Koner Sazahav. The Ziknuse Sovar, when Rebbe got older, he realized it doesn't depend on the respective value of the metals. It depends on how easily they circulate. Kasper de Choris, silver, which circulates more readily, it's over la socher, have a tiva, that's considered the money, David lechorif, as opposed to gold, is not so easy to circulate, because not everybody has change for it, for example, therefore, have a pera, therefore, it becomes peris, becoming like pera la tiva, and again, therefore, the gold, which is the peris, is acquiring the silver, which is the money. So that's why he did that way. It's interesting that actually the Yerushalmi, the version of the Mishnah that's in the Yerushalmi, actually Taka has it according to Rebbe's original version that the silver is the Paris and the gold is considered the money. And in fact, the version of the Mishnah in the Yerushalmi actually begins Hakesef Koneh Hazahav, and since also you have a perek in Mishnayos and Gemara is usually named after its first word, so therefore our perek here in the Bavli we call it Perek Hazahav. In the Yerushalmi, the parallel perek is called Hakesef. There's a sicha in Chelek Vav where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning behind all of this, that gold represents the avodah of tzaddikim, and silver represents the avodah of Bali Tshuva. So the tzaddikim, their avodah is a more constant kind of thing. It never has its ups and downs, therefore it can be compared more to he said the avodah of tzaddikim is like silver, and a Bali Tshuva is like gold. So the avodah of tzaddikim is constant, therefore it's more like chorif, it circulates more readily, it's always available, as opposed to the avodah of Bali Tshuva fluctuates. On the other hand, the avodah of Bali Tshuva is much more precious, so therefore we can say that it's more valuable, and therefore we can talk about the value of it relative to silver and relative to silver, and we can focus on that. So it's two different approaches of looking at whether we consider the silver, the value of gold to outweigh the fact that silver circulates more readily, or whether we don't. The Rebbe doesn't explain over there, but maybe that explains also. He does point out over there that we talk about that silver represents chesed and gold represents gvura, and since there are other places where it talks about that Yerushalmi is more associated with a way of learning of chesed and the Bavli more with gvura, that could explain why we have these different versions of the Bavli and the Yerushalmi respectively. Anyway, Omer Ravashi, Ki Yaldusei Bistamla. So Ravashi says actually the version that Rebbe had when he was younger, that the silver is considered the commodity and the gold is considered the coin, Mistabra, it seems more logical to follow that, which would mean that in our Mishnah, it should be a Kesef Koneh Hazahav. Now, obviously, Ravashi eventually must have changed his mind since our Gemara has it, but Ravashi is saying that actually there seems to be more of a logic to Rebbe's original version. Midikatoni, because the Mishnah continues, had a choshes koneh hakesef, that the copper acquires the silver. So Ravashi points out, Iyamet b'shleim ha-kasper l'gabedav ha-peirahavi, if you're going to tell me that silver relative to gold is considered peiris, because again, the copper, because again, the gold is more valuable. That's why the Mishnah needs to tell us that copper coins acquire silver. Meaning, we need to be told that it's true that relative to gold, silver is considered only payrus because gold is more expensive. We need to be informed that when it comes to copper, since silver is more valuable than copper, then therefore it's considered kesef, and therefore again that the nechoshes is going to require it. Eli amit kasper l'gabidav tirahavi, but if you're going to tell me that silver is considered money relative to gold, because we don't look at their respective values, we look at how easily they circulate, well then there's no reason to mention the case of the copper. Hashta l'gabidav dechoshe minei, Amrit Tivahabi. If you're telling me that silver relative to gold, even though gold has the advantage of being more important, nevertheless we say Tivahabi, that the silver is considered coinage because it circulates more readily. Lagabin Choshes the Ihu Choshev the Ihu Chorif. When it comes to relative to copper, where silver has a double advantage over copper, it circulates, it's more valuable, and it circulates more easily. Midboya, would the Mishnah need to tell us that it's considered the coins relative to copper? Obviously not. So therefore, that gives good reason to say like Rebbe's original version, that it's the silver that's considered the commodity, and it's the gold that's considered the coinage. And therefore now the Mishnah goes on to say, on the other hand, you should know there is a case where silver will be considered the coinage, namely relative to copper. Well, the Gemara says not necessarily. because it's tzrich. After all, you could say the Mishnah still had to tell us the chiddush that it's, that silver is considered coinage relative to copper. You're going to say what's the chiddush if it has a double, if it has a double advantage? Safed at the chamina. Otherwise, you would think hani priti. Because when it comes to prutis, when it comes to copper prutis, but asra de sagi, in those places where they do circulate, inu harifi tve, they do in fact, they are, inu harifi tve mikasva, they do in fact circulate more readily than silver. It's true they don't use copper coinage in all places, but where they do use it, it is often used, it is often used more regularly than silver. So therefore, you could argue, obviously, you could argue, at least in such places, copper should be considered coinage rather than the commodity. Therefore, the Mishnah would have to tell us, since there are places where copper coins don't circulate at all, or at least are not over the surface, they don't circulate so readily, then therefore it's considered only payers. So you could say, in other words, it's not So we do have to consider which one circulates more readily. But the fact is, there are different places when it comes to copper. Some places where it circulates more and some less, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us across the board. Hanachoshes koneas akesef. So therefore, there's no proof from that as far as Rebbe's original version versus his later version. So there are various explanations from Rishonim about different details within this. The bottom line is the Gemara so far has concluded that we have good reason to support Rebbe's later version. And again, the Bavli, in fact, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, does in fact have that version. You could say, we've shown him point out, according to Rebbe's original version, it's true. We could have learned that it's a kavah choymer if according to his later version, even though kesef is considered coinage relative to copper, and we could have learned that from a kavah choymer, but still you could say the Mishnah would have reason to do that because the Mishnah wants to tell us sometimes silver can be a commodity, sometimes it can be coinage. So therefore, it can still work to have the Mishnah say it that way. The Gemara was wondering that according to Rebbe's second version, why would we need to say that if we already were told that? And the point is this point about that copper itself doesn't always circulate so readily. There are different places, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us that across the board, the copper is considered the payers. The Gemara continues. Rav Chiya also holds that gold is considered the coinage, and therefore he would hold like Rebbe's original version, a kesef koines azahav. And we know that as follows: the Rav Oizif Dinere Mibrate de Rav Chiya. Rav one time borrowed gold coins from Rav Chiya's daughter. Rav Chiya was Rav's uncle. So Rav Chiya's daughter, therefore, was Rav's cousin. So he borrowed gold coins from her. Iyaku Dinri, later on, the value of gold coins went up relative to silver. Also, Lachamei Rav Chiya, so Rav came to Rav Chiya to ask, is there a problem of ribis over here? Now, we're going to learn in the next paragraph, we're going to talk in great detail about the dinim of ribis. You have a concept called saw b'saw, that if you borrow a saw of wheat, and then the price goes up, you can't necessarily return a saw of wheat, because then there would be an issue of ribis. When you borrowed that saw, it was worth $10, and when you're returning it, it's worth $15, and that would be a problem of ribis. So here, Rav wants to know. Now, on the other hand, with coins, we don't say that. With money, we don't say that, because in halacha, we consider the value of money to be fixed, and the value of commodities to vary in accordance with the money. In modern economics, you don't necessarily say that way. You would say, for example, that the value of the dollar going down over time. In halacha, we would say rather the value of the dollar remains constant, but how much that dollar can buy goes up and down. Anyway, so now Rav wants to know, basically, are these gold coins they borrowed from his cousin, Are they considered payrus or are they considered money? Amalei, and Rabbi answers him, Zil Shalom Tobin of Tkilin. Go pay her back good and full weight coin. Now, if you tell me according to the Priya that gold is considered the matveya, is considered the coin shaper, well then fine, because then there's no problem of ribis, because he borrowed X number of gold coins, he's paying back exactly the same number, they're worth more, that doesn't matter. But if you tell me that a peer would hold, like Rebbe's second version, that gold is considered the payrus, how would that work? How will they saw the saw? Then you have a problem of borrowing a saw against a saw, but also, and then it would be also. So that shows that a peer holds that the gold must be the matbeah. But the Gemara says not necessarily. Rav dinre havule, because actually Rav already had gold dinarim available to him when he borrowed. The reason he borrowed is because they weren't available to him just at that moment. But he actually had gold coins. He just wasn't able to get to them right now. So therefore, nasa ka'imala. So therefore, it's the equivalent of telling her, halveni abshi yavibni, lend me some money, lend me money or produce until my son comes. Abshi emsamatea. Or until I find the key, so then in that case, there's no issue of saw b'saw with that. We're going to learn in the next perek that this whole issue of saw b'saw only comes in if you have a couple of exceptions to that rule, and one of them is yesh loy, if you actually have some of that commodity available, then we don't say the halacha of that you're also to borrow a saw b'saw, because in effect, we say that you could have paid it back at that time. So here, the same way, since Rav really had gold dinarim available, he just couldn't get to them at the moment. Then therefore, there's no problem of sabisah. So Rav Chia can hold that gold is in fact considered a commodity, but because Rav had available to him, it's called yeshloi. Then therefore, there's no problem of sabisah. Now Tosfos points out in that case, then what was Rav asking in the first place is because at the end of the next parak, after we go through all the dinim of Ribis, we're going to learn over there that Hillel, that here we have one of the rare examples where Hillel himself says an opinion in halacha as opposed to base Hillel, and Hillel says over there that this exception of yesh loy and this exception of halveni and shiyavi bni doesn't apply. So Rav wanted to know whether the halacha is like Hillel or not. Okay. The Gemara continues. Omar Rava. Hai Tana Sova Dava Tivahab. The following Tana of the following Braisa holds, like Rebbe's original version, that gold is considered the Matbeah. The Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Fruta Sha'amru, when the Chachamim talk about a Fruta, as far as various dinim, for example, that Kedushin requires a Fruta, or different other dinim later on in the parak. Actually, we're going to learn that there's a number of dinim where a pruta is considered the minimum for various things in halacha. So the definition of a pruta, echad mishmona be'isur ha'itala. It's 1/8 of an Italian isur, which we learned about that in kedushin. L'mayin nachtamina. Why is that important for us to know? The reason is, v'kadusha isha, for kedushin, you have a machlokas v'shamay v'shilal at the beginning of kedushin, where the kedushin requires a dinner according to v'shamay, or a pruta according to v'shilal. The halacha is like v'shilal, a pruta is enough, so we need to know how much a pruta is, so we should know it's 1/8 of an Italian iser. In turn, iser echad me'esrim v'abob a dinner shokesef, an iser is 1/24 of a silver dinner, l'may naftimina, l'mekach ha'memter. That's relevant as far as buying and selling. If two people want to exchange, one has silver dinarim and the other one has isarim, then we should know the rate of exchange is 1/24. Then the Braisa continues, dinar shel kesef echad me'esrim v'chamisha v'dinar shel zahav. In turn, a silver dinner is 1/25 of a gold dinner. L'may nafkimina, what's the relevance of that? L'pidyon ha'ben. That's relevant to know, as far as pidyon ha'ben, that since a shekel in the Torah, which is the equivalent of a selah of the times of the Chachamim, is 4 dinarim, so the 5 sloyim of the Torah would be 20 dinarim. So now, if the father gives the kohen a gold dinar, which constitutes 25 silver dinarim, then the kohen would have to give him as change 5 silver dinarim. So Tosfos points out a couple of other possibilities over here as well. Lamecha Homemker can also mean for example, Tosfos says, what if somebody sold something where the price was 24 Isserim, and later on, now the value of Isserim goes down relative to Dinarim, and now you have, say, 32 Isserim in a dinner. You can't say, well, look, I only have to pay you 24 Isser, and it's the dinner that went up. No, you have to say that he has to give him the full 32 Isser or a silver dinner, because we go according to what the dinner was worth at a time. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, an interesting point that in near times, and this is how it was in times of the Gemara as well, the rate of exchange between a certain amount of silver and a certain amount of gold was really 1 in 12. So where are we getting 1 in 25 over here for silver versus gold? Tosfos points out that actually the gold dinarim were not only more valuable in that they were made of a more valuable metal, but they were also thicker than the silver dinarim. Twice as thick, so therefore you have twice as much metal in a gold dinner as you do in a silver dinner, and then since the rate of exchange was 1 to 12 or 1 to 12 and a half, then therefore that brings you to your exchange rate that we're saying over here in the Gemara of 1 to 25. Anyway, so Rava says, If you tell me that gold is considered the matveya for purposes of these halachas, then we can understand where when it comes to the last part, where the Tana is saying the amount of pidyon haben is X amount relative to a gold dinner, then fine, you can say Meshayo Tana, but midi dekits, then the Tana is evaluating based on something that has a fixed value. So the Tana is a Tana, the Braisa is saying silver, which is considered the commodity, fluctuates relative to gold, but however it is, it's always going to be the amount of silver you give to the Kohen is going to be 4/5 of a gold dinner. Eli, I'm a Peira Avi, but if you tell me the gold itself is considered Peiras, Meshire Tanim Amidi de Oiker Mazil, how could Tanya give us a figure relative to gold, which is going to fluctuate in value relative to silver? So wouldn't that show, therefore, that the gold must be considered the Matbea, and everything else is valued relative to that? So that would prove Rebbe's original opinion. Rishonim point out actually the fact is the Psukim in the Torah mentions silver, the Erkach HaChamesha Shkolim, the Shekel HaKodesh, where Shekel is made out of silver, but they're explaining, in other words, that the point is that it's obviously the Torah is going to be giving us a fixed value, and again, if we're going to say that gold always stays of constant value and silver value and silver varies, then it's going to be that at the time of when the Torah was given, and generally that's how it was in the time of the Gemara, it would usually be 4/5 of a gold dinner. But that shows, in other words, that the gold is the standard of value against which everything else goes. So the answer is not the answer. The Gemara continues, because after all, if you're going to say in that case that the silver is going to be the fixed standard of value, then you can't necessarily say that the Kohen is always going to give him back 5 silver dinarim. Zimnin de mahadale kahana, sometimes the Kohen may have to give him a larger amount of change. And then there are going to be other times when the father is going to have to give more to the Kohen because it's going to depend. If we're going to say that if the Braisa is telling us that you should know a silver dinner is always 1/25 of a gold dinner, and you're going to say the gold itself actually varies in value, you can't necessarily say as a blanket statement that if he gives him a gold dinner, he's always going to get 5 silver dinarim and change. It's going to depend. El shmamina tiva habi. That would show that gold must be considered the matbea. So shmamina. Okay, so you can prove that the Tana of that Braisa holds like Rebbe's original version that gold is considered the matbea. That doesn't necessarily show the halacha is like that. And in fact, most Rishonim say the halacha is in fact like Rebbe's later version that gold is considered to be the commodity rather than the coinage. So now the Gemara is going to start on the discussion of how this relates to the dinim of pidyon ma'aser sheni. That we know the Torah tells us that if you have ma'aser sheni and you can't take it all to your shalayim because you have too much of it, then you exchange it for coins, and you take the coins to your shalayim, the coins themselves sometimes you may have to exchange. So now the Gemara is going to start dealing with that matter. Throughout this perek, actually, we're going to be bringing up this matter of Pinyan Maisi Sheni a number of times because it directly relates to all these matters of Meshicha and of how one thing acquires another and so forth. So the Mishnah says, Tnanhos, and we learn in Masechta Maisi Sheni, Beshamai says that a person who has sloyim of silver that he exchanged Maaser Sheni for, he's not allowed to in turn transfer the kedusha from those silver coins onto gold dinar. Which will make it easier for him, because again, gold, it takes up less volume. Gold dinar, since there are 25 silver dinar to a gold dinar, and we said the volume of a gold dinar is only twice that of a silver dinar, so therefore it would be more efficient for him to be able to do that, but the Shammai says you can't do that. But the Silva Matirin, the Silva says you could. Now, Rabbi Yochanan and Rosh Lakish argue about why the Shammai and the Silva hold their respective opinions and what they would say. One says the machlokas is davka when he wants to be machalo the silver coins onto gold dinar. The Beshamai sabri kasper tiva v'davar peira. Beshamai holds like our Mishnah, the silver is considered to be the money, the gold is considered the peiris. The tiva peira loy machalin. And when it comes to Maaser Sheni, we can exchange fruit, produce of Maaser Sheni for money, but not the other way around. You can't take money of Maaser Sheni and exchange it for fruit. Well, since in effect over here the gold is considered fruit, as we've just established, then therefore Bishama is going to say that you can't do that, because that would amount to exchanging something that you have already as money, the silver, and exchanging it for produce, which is like the gold. Or Basil Sabri Kasla paid of a dip a davativa, whereas Basil would hold the other way around, like Rebbe held in his younger years. The silver is considered the payrus, the gold is considered the coins, or payra ativa machalalinan, and no problem, you can be machalal payrus on money, therefore you can be machalal the silver on the gold. But, according to this opinion, Aval payrus al dinarin, but if to begin with you wanted to take the payrus and be machalal them on gold coins, according to that opinion, divrei hakol machalalinan, everybody would agree that you could. Even Beis Shammai holds that gold, fine, they hold that gold is considered payrus relative to silver, but they hold that it is considered money relative to anything else. So therefore, my timer, why would they allow that needed to have that kesef for Beis Hillel? Because it's similar to the way Beis Hillel is allowing you to be machalal on silver. In Beis Hillel's opinion, we're saying Beis Hillel holds that the silver is considered payrus, and yet, according to Beis Hillel, surely you can be machalo fruit of Maaser Sheni on silver coins, because they would say relative to gold, they would say that silver is considered payrus. But relative to payrus, silver is surely considered money rather than another kind of payrus. So in other words, not a matter of exchanging payrus for payrus. It would be a matter of you exchanging payrus for coins, and that's fine. Zohav Nami, the Beis Shammai, then according to that, Beis Shammai would say, take a similar view. It is true that gold sometimes is considered payrus relative to silver, but when it comes to actual fruit, it's considered coinage, so therefore you can be mechalal on it. So according to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say it's fine to be mechalal the Maaser Sheni directly on gold. The question is, once you are mechalal on silver, can you then go and transfer the kedusha from that silver onto gold? According to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say that you couldn't do that. Rishonim discuss a point over here that Rashi is saying over here that even we're talking according to this opinion to exchange silver for gold, since the gold is considered payrus, would be osur min haTorah. On the other hand, that's according to Rashi. According to the Ritva, no, it's min haTorah, it would only be to use actual fruit. Because the whole point is, the Torah wants to make it easier for you to get to your shalayim, and if you have a big volume of fruit, you're not going to be able to do that. But min haTorah would have been fine to do silver on gold, even according to Beis Shammai. And it's only midrabbanan that we would be saying, because when you have gold, which according to this opinion is considered payless, if you're allowed to be machal on that, you might come to be machal on fruit, which isn't going to work. So according to that opinion, in short, according to Beis Shammai, we'd say that gold is not always considered payless. It really depends. Relative to silver, it is, but relative to payless, it's not. Now that's one opinion. The other opinion says between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, after Peiros al Dinan and Machloikas, no, the Machloikas would actually be even when it comes to exchanging the coins directly for gold, exchanging the fruit directly for gold dinarim, that Beis Shammai would not allow. Because Beis Shammai would say that the gold is considered Peiros, and you can't be Machal Peiros on Peiros. So the Gemara says, in that case, Lamanda Omer, after Peiros al Dinarim Machloikas. Well, according to that opinion, that you have that Machloikas, even when it's Peiros on Dinarim, then Adam Miflegi was slowing on Dinarim. Why indeed are they only arguing in the Mishnah about silver coins on gold, Liflegi with Peiros al Dinarim? Why according to that opinion, is the Machloikas not presented as far as can you be Machal or Maisa Sheni directly on gold? And the answer is Iflug Bepeiros al Dinarim, because if the Mishnah presented the Machlokas only in that way, Hava Amina, then you would think Hani Mili Bepeiros al Dinarim. You know why this Hillel says that you can do it, because you're doing directly on gold coins, and after all, gold coins are considered coinage, they're considered Machbeya in some cases. But when it comes to silver and gold, maybe the silver would agree with the Shammai to Dabla the Gabakas for Peirahavi. Maybe they would agree that gold is considered Peiros relative to silver. Veloy Machal Linen, and you can't be Machalo. Kamash Malan, therefore the Mishnah has to tell us that no, this Hillel holds that even in that case, even as far as silver and gold, we're going to allow it. It doesn't matter that much for us to be aware that according to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say that we're not even going to allow Peiros on Dinarim, because the halacha is not like Beis Shammai anyway. It's more important for us to clarify Beis Hillel's opinion. So we'll continue. So the next daf, then the Gemara continues with discussing. Now we said we have a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. We didn't say which one said which. So we have to establish. We have to figure out which one says which understanding of the Shammai versus Beis Hillel. The Gemara will often do that. Often it brings a machlokas and says chad omer this and chad omer that, and then the Gemara will try to establish which one actually said one and which one actually said the other. Shukriya, everyone.